Hello from Kuala Lumpur. I'm Gary Bauman, and this is the latest in the Southeast Asia Travel Show's In Conversation series. Today I'll be chatting with TV presenter, photographer, author, and bespoke travel company founder, Christy Elmendorp. So let's get started. This is the Southeast Asia Travel Show. Hello wherever you are in the world, and thanks for listening in. Today, it's a genuine pleasure to catch up and chat with Christy Elmendorp, founder of Soma Journeys, a bespoke luxury travel company, and author of a new travel memoir, Where the Light Begins, a seeker's journey for truth, freedom, and a place to call home. I hope you enjoy the interview that we recorded on the 8th of July. Okay, so Christy Elmendorp, welcome to the Southeast Asia Travel Show. How are you doing?
Thank you, Gary. Thank you for inviting me here. I'm doing really well.
You're in the Netherlands right now, in the eastern part of the Netherlands, I believe.
Yes, that's correct. I moved out of Amsterdam a year ago, and I live now in a beautiful little town called Arnhem. It's in the east of the Netherlands, bordering Germany.
Beautiful. And how's the weather there today?
It's awful. You know, which to me is perfect because it's raining and it's gray, and for me it's perfect. I call it like intellectual weather, so then you don't feel bad being inside. That sounds good. How about there in KL?
Here in KL, we're about to have a very big storm. The clouds are gathering and it's getting very dark. So I think if you hear a clap of thunder, that's the reason. I thought I'd bring up the weather, Christy, because the last time we met, as we were just saying off air, was back in 2013. We were in Bangkok, and I remember it was scorching hot. Do you remember that?
Right, I remember that. It was. Although it was. Yeah, I believe you were there. You were one of the people we invited because we were organizing. I was working at the time as a communication manager part-time for a company called Secret Retreat.
That's right.
They're a wonderful company, and they basically, you know, focus on bringing back the essence of Asia, I think, that they felt was getting lost. And we were organizing a secret dinner on the Chao Phraya River.
So we had a river cruise, and then we had a garden party and dinner at those beautiful villas overlooking the river with the temple in the background. It was a pretty fabulous night.
Yeah, very good memory. It was.
Okay, so let's get started, Chrissy. Firstly, let's talk about you. So you were born in Jakarta to Dutch Indonesian parents. You studied in Amsterdam and in London. So you moved around a great deal from an early age. But when did you start to feel that travel was going to become a big part of your life?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because I did have a very nomadic upbringing. But I think travel really started to feel a major part of my life when I started my own high-end travel company called Soma Journeys, because that's when travel became my whole focus.
That's when it started to happen. So before that, you were traveling. So I mean, you've lived in a few countries. You were a TV presenter in Thailand, and after that, you went on to set up your own advertising company focusing on Thai hospitality and tourism. So what took you to those places and those roles, and you know, what did you learn from those experiences?
Well, you know, like, I've always been drawn by storytelling. And I love that, you know, we can use stories to inspire, to make people feel certain things, maybe even as a temporary form of escape. So I was living in Thailand at the time with my family. And when I was offered a job in television, it was a local television station, I went for it. I was like, wow, this is a way where I could learn the craft by doing. And I'm very much someone who throws herself into anything that that really engages me. So I just went for it, and also wanted to learn a little bit how post-production works, sitting with the editor. And that's kind of where I also learned that I actually loved also the storytelling behind the camera, maybe even more. And then as I was working, when I started to realize that I enjoyed being more behind the camera, that's when I co-founded a media company called Visual Works, where together with a seasoned photographer, we decided we'd produce marketing material for the hospitality and tourism industry, because that was kind of the market there. And it was a lot of fun. We would, it was also storytelling, and how can you kind of, you know, inspire people who are sitting back home looking out at the gray weather and want to inspire them to come to Thailand or to go on a holiday. But I actually learned two things. You were asking, like, what did I learn most from each experience? And I learned actually that as I was editing inside for, you know, most of my hours, recording voiceovers about beautiful places and travel experiences, I realized that I actually wanted to experience them much more for myself than just sit behind a screen writing about it. And the other thing that I learned was, you know, that maybe a desk job wasn't for me after all, and that it's really important to do things you're excited about, that money alone is never going to be enough, because we were doing quite well, but that I just realized that wasn't going to be a motivator for me anymore. So I look back at that time as a very valuable experience.
So it was quite a formative experience, because actually what you did next was you actually did get up and you did start traveling. So I think in 2012, you created Soma Journeys, which was your own bespoke luxury travel company. So tell us more about that. What were your objectives of setting that up, and why did you select the name Soma?
Yeah, well, it was really interesting because, you know, like there's a point. So I started first traveling, and actually first started traveling for myself. This was before I started Soma Journeys. At one point, I started to realize, you know, that travel is a great way not just to discover the world around you, but also to discover a world within. And I started to see that actually in the beginning, I was really just traveling for other people, because I would tell them where I'd been and what I'd seen. And I would try to put as many highlights as I could into a trip so that I could later brag about it. And I realized then, like, you know what, I'm actually not really just getting to absorb flavor of a place or the true, like, sounds of this place. And I was so busy at trying to capture it on my camera and trying to, like, see as many things as I could, that after a while I started to see this pattern that I was really missing out on maybe what was most memorable and essential, which were actually the spontaneous, meaningful interactions I would have with people I met, or just being maybe in awe of, you know, how a sunset would go over a temple, and you know, the off chance that I did just sit there to absorb the moment. And that's kind of when the vision arose for me to want to create Soma Journeys. You know, that travel would not just become a way of learning something about the world around you, but also something maybe new about yourself.
Yeah.
I often felt like, you know, through the only way you can really learn about yourself is actually through the other. You can't really, like, learn about yourself on your own.
Mm-hmm.
And it's through that dialogue and that interaction with the seeming, quote-unquote, other. Because I actually found that through the travel, there were so many similarities that even though they maybe had a different culture or cuisine or, you know, upbringing, that they all wanted the same thing. You know, we all want, you know, to be loved and to be seen, and for our loved ones to be okay. And I really wanted to be able to provide a space for that, using travel in a way as like the vehicle for that.
Mm-hmm. So I'll ask you a little bit in a minute about some of your clients and some of your journeys and your destinations. But I'm quite interested, A, about the name. We'll come back to the name. How did you start to curate the destinations that you were going to choose and the journeys that you were going to choose? What was your process for doing that?
Oh, I love that question. I had traveled a little bit already on my own. And, you know, like, I always feel like I can only really get excited about something and get other people excited about it if I'm excited. So I actually, the curation process was really like, where's a place I would like to go or I'm interested in, and use that as my guiding, as my map. And I personally always been very interested in more the remote areas. I've been more interested in areas like getting back to nature. I kind of feel like there's something magical there when we can kind of step out of this almost unnatural rhythm that we maybe have, you know, when we are in working mode or when we're back home. You know, we are constantly pulled by other people's times. And when you're in nature, you can kind of forget a little bit about that, like about the responsibilities that you have, and maybe just be more in touch with the natural nature and rhythm.
Yeah.
And so I would pick places like Tibet, Mongolia. I would first focus more in Asia because I was based in Bangkok and Bhutan, Myanmar, and then I would always look for places that were a little bit off the beaten track. And I also felt like strongly this is where I could provide value, because we live in an internet age where you can do so much online already. So I didn't want to go for that. I really wanted to go to places where I could provide value. And so I would travel there myself first to be able to experience it for myself first, and to really be able to then design an experience around that. Mm-hmm. And also what I felt was very important by traveling there myself first was to also make connections with people there. So when I was in Mongolia, I made connection with, you know, a champion racer, camel racer, you know, which I could only kind of meet because, well, for another story, because I got lost in the Gobi Desert, or made friends with some of the nomadic reindeer people living up in the north, which was only because, you know, like I was writing there myself. And so, yeah, I felt very much like my work was just really an extension of my own interest. And I'm sure there were going to be other people like me that longed for the same.
Which leads into the next question. That leads beautifully into the next question, Christy, because we'll go back to the name, because the name has very spiritual connotations. And your clients, that how did they graduate towards your company? How did they find what they were looking for in summer journeys?
Well, my clients were often very well-traveled people. So as I said earlier, like, I came to the realization like I was traveling for other people. I wasn't traveling for myself. And so there were really clients that were well-traveled already. They didn't need to tell other people about their travels, and they really wanted to go for themselves. They often have very fast-paced lives back home. They tended to be the overachievers, you know, who also really wanted to get back in nature. But at the same time, they wanted to have that comfortable, you know, kind of standard that they were used to, so kind of the high-end experience. It was often adventure by day and then comforts by night. And that was always my challenge, to see how I could combine the two. And it was really word of mouth. So it started out, so I also focused on, like, you know, each person that would be either recommended to me or would find me, it was like, I would always treat them like they are going to be my ambassadors. So it was very much word of mouth, and it was very special that way, because I would get to then host experiences for them and then their friends and their family, and sometimes for their children or their grandchildren. And it enriched my life in the process, because they became close friends. We became close friends as well, and I'm still in touch with many of them. So
was it personal journeys, or did you have small groups?
It was a mix. Mm-hmm. So there were a few times, like, I would organize, like, they call them fixed departure dates. And so these were individuals coming together. But I often found more that the personalized journeys were much more popular with people, because they wanted to travel with the people they knew. And they only had maybe a week to spend, so they wanted it to be, you know, kind of very personalized to their needs, and also a way for them to spend catch-up time with their friends. So it would either be a group of young friends coming together from all over the world wanting to do, and would usually go on annual trips together. Multi-generational is also quite popular. So you'd have, like, the grandparents inviting their kids and their grandkids as a way of spending time together. And they're also just very personalized for an individual or a couple. It was a bit of a mix.
Yeah. And were they extended trips? Were they short trips? Was it a mixture of length of time that you were traveling?
It was definitely a mixture. So the average was usually a week to 10 days. That was the maximum we could spend. But we also had people who would go for, you know, like, they would fit five different destinations and would go on the road for about 3 weeks. That was the one that I did for the family. So they would try to see different parts, and it would be really like an experience they were all looking forward to, like one of a once-in-a-lifetime experience. But usually there would be 7 to 10 days.
Right. And you mentioned already, you've mentioned Tibet, you mentioned Bhutan, you mentioned Mongolia. I know it's a very difficult question, but were there any specifically memorable journeys or destinations?
Yeah, absolutely. It is a tough question, because they are all too unique in their own way. But I really enjoyed doing also just because it was a challenge for me, just a logistical challenge, was organizing a horseback riding trip for young professionals who were flying in from the Philippines, from France, from the UK, and they wanted to ride up to the nomadic reindeer people in the North Mongolia, and just to be able to organize that for them, where they could, you know, like, they could go horseback riding and stay in gares and have that whole experience. It was very rewarding, especially when you're able to do that and you get the feedback from them. So that was very memorable. And I also really enjoyed organizing a trip to Iceland, actually. So I first had to go there myself. It was memorable for me, and also then memorable for the family I organized it with. But it was in the winter, and the landscape is so white and arid. It's almost like you've arrived on the moon. It was nothing I've ever seen before. And, you know, like I'm kind of like an amateur photographer, so I always bring my camera with me. And the light from the sun is so different there, the way it reflects off the snow. It's almost like this pink kind of light. So it was very, yeah, it was very different. And also coming just to see how the people live there. They're just so, it feels like they're just so in harmony with nature.
Right.
I'm actually looking forward to going back there again, but then in the summer, because it's supposed to be extremely different, where it's just very green and mossy and the opposite of the arid moonlight landscape.
All right. Well, I'm deeply envious because those are two destinations I've never been to. I've never been to Mongolia and I've never been to Iceland. So thanks for sharing those memories. They've kind of inspired me to do one or both in future. But actually, that segues beautifully, moving from Asia into Europe, because you actually moved back from Asia, back to the Netherlands in 2015. So what prompted that decision, Christy?
That's correct. I mean, I would always, like all my family now live in the Netherlands. I'm half Dutch, half Indonesian, as you said earlier. And in the past, I would like come and visit maybe twice a year and for a very short amount of time. And I always kind of felt a little bit like I was starting to miss out on, you know, on birthdays and on like graduation. But I always had kind of in the back of my mind, like, well, there's still time. Like, I can eventually start maybe thinking about moving back. But it was never really a reality because it was so hard to even think about leaving Asia. And I was living in Bangkok at the time. You know, I'd spent like the past 15 years there. So I couldn't really imagine it or how I would get myself to do it. And then there was a turning point in my life where my Thai stepmother, so my father remarried, and my Thai stepmother, who was also living in Amsterdam at the time, she was diagnosed with like the final stages of lung cancer. So it was really a surprise to all of us. And the doctor said she only had a few more months to live. And I felt very fortunate because she actually lived 6 months longer. But I flew back to Amsterdam and got to spend really quality time with her. But it really caused me to think, like, I'm just assuming, you know, like I just take for granted that, because she was only 54, so I was taking for granted that my own mother and family, that they would, yeah, you think they're young. But then sure. I realized I couldn't. And it was, I almost saw it as a blessing in disguise, which helped me narrow down to, okay, well, what is really important in my life? And narrow the focus. And she just kind of thinks about it. It didn't have to. And it kind of came to the conclusion, like, well, I wouldn't want to live life with regret. And so I felt like, well, this is maybe the time to start spending more meaningful memories with my family and to kind of leave it open, like for how long that would be. And so that's kind of what would cause quite a rapid shift in me moving out of Asia.
Right. And so that rapid shift has literally sort of opened a new chapter of your life. And that's actually led to you writing and publishing your first book, which is a travel memoir called Where the Light Begins, A Seeker's Journey for Truth, Freedom, and a Place to Call Home. So let's begin with the title first. How did you choose that and what does it mean to you? Because I think you actually changed the title. Is that right, Christy?
Yeah, I had a working title, which was called The Secret Garden, because the book was always going to end in the jungles of Java when I had the working title. And it was kind of like a secret garden. So I wanted to kind of capture that, even though I also knew it was a name of a children's book and that it might kind of have too much of that connotation. And so I just said to myself, you know what, I'm going to complete the book and then let's see if that title would still stay with me or if I wanted something new. So it's exactly the same story, but then I felt like Where the Light Begins was actually much more appropriate. And A Seeker's Journey for Truth, Freedom, and a Place Calm. It's a mouthful. And but the reason why I chose the title is I actually had a very religious upbringing, even though I'm not religious myself at all. But I did have a very Christian upbringing. And I think that has kind of led to me I've always been deeply curious, I think, about the existential questions, like who am I? Why am I here? Where will I go? And that has led me as an adult to kind of go on a quest to search for truth outside of my Christian upbringing. And in many ways, I think I was also looking for freedom, you know, from what I was told to believe. And I kind of had like these two kind of conflicting currents with me. And one was like, you want to please and you want to be like agreeable. And the other one was like, well, I also had a really strong rebellious side in me, which wanted to also listen to my own like curiosity and intuition. And so that's where that freedom came from. Like, how can I find the courage to do that instead? And the last part about finding home, you know, it was often hard knowing for me growing up where home really was. It's like, was it in the country I was born, which was Indonesia, or was it in the Netherlands, like which is the nationality I hold and where I grew up half my life, or was it in Thailand where, you know, where I was living? And I think in the back of my mind, I was always trying to answer that for myself, but yeah, never really thinking I'd actually find it in a very unusual place. So that's a bit why the title of the, why I chose that title for the book.
Sure. So we'll come to the content in a minute and the writing of the book. But was it mentally, for, was this a formative thing over a period of years? Were you thinking about writing this book going back to when you're actually traveling around Asia? Or was it once you came to the Netherlands, was you kind of decided this was the time I want to write the book?
I love your question because, so I have this thing that I do, which gets me into trouble sometimes, So it's always like every now and then I ask myself, what do I fear most? And then I'll go and tackle it because I figure, you know, when you face your fears, you realize there's nothing to be afraid of. And it's also maybe it helps you grow as a person. And you know, so Soma Journeys is one of that. I think I feared like, whoa, I'm going to start my own company. I'm not going to be co-founding it or working behind the scenes. This is really something with my name on it. But then going for it and just seeing, wow, my life has been so enriched because of it. Like the people I met, I got to travel. And so it's like you realize that even though it's quite a scary thing, when you put yourself to the challenge, it enlarges your life. And when I asked my question that one day, the answer came like, well, you're going to have to document your experiences in a book. And this was scary. This was terrifying because I'm actually very private when it comes to my personal life. I'm the person who much rather ask the questions about, you know, personal questions and listen to it. But I would cringe if the same were asked to me. So as an introvert, as a closet introvert, I was like, okay, no, I'm not going to do that right now. So I kept putting it off. And then, oh, that's the coffee machine. I kept putting it off. And then it kept coming up for me. So when I turned 30, I was like, and there was this very auspicious moment where I was invited to be a photographer in residence at this beautiful wellness resort in the jungles of Java, where they offered me to stay there for a few months. And I said, okay, I can't refuse it. This is the perfect time to jumpstart my book. So mind you, it took me almost 7 years to complete this challenge. So, and never would I've imagined like the, you know, the places, I mean, like how it would change my life so in depth personally. So I started already writing it while running Summer Journeys, which was near impossible. It was really impossible to focus. And so when I moved to the Netherlands 5 years ago, I thought, okay, this is my chance to do that. And if it wasn't for like actually the last year just really making a push for it, I don't think I would have been able to finally come to the end of it.
Right. So going back to that 7 year sort of gestation period, if you go back to the start of it, did you know what you wanted to include? You know, and then how did you decide which parts of your life, your travels, your experiences that you would include, and which of those would you leave out? Because as you mentioned there, Chrissy, being quite a private person, opening up your life story is a challenge.
Exactly. Well, I knew the intention of the book, and the intention of the book was really to share. I felt like I've been very fortunate. I've been, you know, just through how my life unfolded, I've been able to receive wisdom and been also on the receiving end of people entrusting me their experiences and things that really helped me in my own life. So I knew my intention was, okay, now it's your turn to give back. We can't, you know, like you can't just keep receiving without doing something in return. But how the story would shape, that was the real challenge, because what do you include and what do you leave out and what is secondary? And so what I did was, having no experience in writing a book, I just thought, okay, I'm just going to write the whole storyline down in a chronological order, which ended up being this. And fortunately, I kept journals from a very young age. I kept journals all along. And so I had a lot of material to sift through and to help me with my memory. But I would just write things down from a chronological age and then be able to look at it. And that left me with a manuscript of over 120,000 words. So it was a huge manuscript. And I must have made like four edits from that. And at one point, I just couldn't see the forest for the trees. So I was just like, yeah, I'm too much with this material. And that's when I made a decision, which I wish I'd done much sooner, was to hire a developmental editor. So you have kind of three types of editing that someone can do. And a developmental editor, what she'll do is she'll look at the whole storyline and kind of see, okay, what's the thread? And then you have like the editor who then really actually gets into the grammar and the proof editing. But she really helped me with like, okay, what's the thread? And she helped me narrow it down actually to focus on. She took out 1/3 of the story actually, or of the original manuscript, and helped me really narrow down on my focus for my quest for truth and for freedom and to find home. And she would only then keep the characters that were relevant to that quest. So there's actually still a lot of material that I could always use for maybe a later book or, right. Yeah.
And the book is actually just published, is that right?
That's right. Actually, it's going live today. So it's now Wednesday, 8th of July. So I'm doing the actual launch today. So it can actually be ordered and electronically as well as a paperback. And yeah, I'm really excited about that. It's still surreal. It's almost like having a second child.
Which brings us beautifully into our next question, Christy. Thank you so much for that, because you recently became a mom. You have a son, Goya. And I read something that you wrote recently about motherhood, which you said that one thing that I didn't expect would happen in this new role was an opportunity to exercise my muscles in the art of letting go. So come on, elaborate on that.
Well, I have to confess, I think I'm very much someone who likes to be in control. So I like to have a plan, you know, and I like to have structure to my day, the way I work. And so somehow in my mind, I just assumed that a baby would comply with my schedule. And, you know, like any probably experienced parent would now know, the opposite is true. And so it's very interesting because, you know, the funny thing is intellectually, and even something I actually try to very much be conscious of, is to actually be open to what wants to arise in a moment. So I'm actually very aware of my like control freakish behavior and wanting structure and discipline in my life. But I also know, you know, besides the great value of having a schedule, there is value to that. But it doesn't mean you have to go into each assignment with blinders on, like kind of a checklist you just tick off. But having a baby actually really, really helped. Yeah, it really helped me be more in the moment as well, and to really be also open, you know, to the flow of what wants to happen instead, and to not actually see that as a failure, but as a strength. And so I think that's what I meant with, you know, my like to exercise my muscles and the art of just letting go, because I actually experienced for myself, like I suffer when I fight with what is, you know, if I'm like, if I have like another idea of what needs to be and it's not happening. And I notice that I'm a much more happier, peaceful person when I can just kind of like take the reality of what is and work with that instead. And I find that when I do that, my work is much more inspired, or I'm much more productive. Mm-hmm. So he's my little teacher.
And it's been an interesting time to have a little teacher. I mean, the world has changed enormously over the past 6 months, and especially the concept of travel, which you and I have both lived and worked in so much. Have you taken time during what's happened in recent months and reflect on the freedom to travel that you've enjoyed in your life, and perhaps what travel might mean to you and your family in the future?
Yeah, I really have, actually, especially, you know, with COVID-19, and we were in tech, we felt, I mean, like they call it intellectual lockdown in the Netherlands. So we are advised to work from home and stay from home, but it's not like going to be, you know, enforced. It's more like, and it definitely did cause me to think a lot about, and even when I was running summer journeys, you know, I always felt very mixed about travel. Like on one hand, I actually felt that people should just stay home, like myself included, because I knew, you know, like travel uses up a lot of unrenewable resources. But at the same time, I also knew that we fear what we don't know. So travel also feels like, you know, it's an effective way to see the other, the different cultures, the customs, and a common denominator. But now, you know, we live in such a connected world, and you can also learn those things by not necessarily needing to always travel. And I also just think for myself, like if we do decide to travel, to have it be more quality rather than quantity. You know, there was a time in my life when I was maybe 2 days home to, you know, I wouldn't even unpack my suitcase. So I was 2 days home out of a month, and the rest of the time I was just constantly hopping planes. And I definitely think very differently about that now. And I definitely think, like, I would love for my son to experience the world, but then for it to really be a quality experience when we go, and not just like, hey, let's fly down to Italy for pizza or something. and also maybe looking more into rail travel. You know, like, could we also go there by train?
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you're talking more within Europe, or if we went to Asia, to then fly there, but then maybe take travel by rail. So definitely, I've definitely shifted my way that looking at travel is actually a luxury in every sense of the word. You know, that is actually a real luxury rather than something we should just take for granted.
That's beautifully, and very eloquently stated. Because I kind of agree with you as well. I mean, like yourself, you know, I've traveled so much over recent years living in Asia, living out of suitcases, going to places, seeing things.
Right.
But once you slow down, and aging is a little bit a part of that, but generally the last 6 months have been a very, very existential questioning of everything. But travel in particular is certainly one of those things that you kind of realize, well, what happens next? And how do our lives have to change? And the sustainability aspects and the emotional aspects, so much has changed.
Exactly, yeah. And I actually think it as a positive, you know, it doesn't mean that the past was bad, but it also just means that, you know, we are evolving, as a human race. And that's not a bad thing. Like, and it's okay to rethink things every now and then, and then change your lives accordingly to that.
Yeah,
it's a very positive thing.
100%. So to finish up, Christy, let's finish on a travel note. You've traveled some amazing places, and you've shared some rare cultural and spiritual experiences. But I'm pretty sure your bucket list isn't fully completed, even though we're rethinking what travel might mean. So where have you not visited yet that still calls you to go?
There are two places that come to mind, and one of them is Japan, which I regret I hadn't visited. Didn't visit Japan when I was living in Asia, but I would really love to still see Japan, and I would love to go to Slovenia because of the nature element again.
Well, that's beautifully connected. So you've connected Asia and Europe once again, Christy. Christy,
I guess it's representative of myself.
absolutely. It was wonderful to talk to you. Thanks so much for your time and insights. And we'll put up some information about your book with the interview as well. And I can't wait to read it. I'm really looking forward to it because I've read a lot of your writings before. And I know that there's a lot of spirituality, but there's also a lot of vulnerability in your writing, which is great. So I'm looking forward to reading your book.
Thank you very much, Gary. Thanks so much for having me on your show.
Thank you. And take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.